Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Fun show coming up today. We have now seen the Chicago Cubs not only win, but bury the Olympics in the ratings. Last night's Game 7 was a 25.2 overnight rating. That is the highest since the Yankees and Diamondbacks Game 7 in 2001 that Arizona won in the Luis Gonzalez infield hit off of Mariano Rivera for Arizona's only World Series title. And that had a 27 rating that night. This one had a 25.2 in Chicago. It was over 51. And a 71 share. Cleveland had a 48.6 rating. Huge share. Country, 25.2. Number one show for the night by a wide margin. On top of it, it beat every night of the Rio Olympics, and it beat every night of the London Olympics except for one. And remember, the London Olympics were considered to be a huge success, ratings-wise. Well, last night's Game 7 beat every night of the London Olympics from 2012, except for, I believe, the opening night, which was the night that Daniel Craig jumped out of the plane with the Queen. Or at least two people representing those individuals. So baseball's back. The Olympics are passe. That's how I view those numbers. Is that how you looked at it too, Sean?
Yep. When I found that information, yeah, I texted them to you in the suit. Have not no reply or comment from the suit as of yet. No surprise.
Oh, no. I mean, let me put you this way.
All of a sudden, his workday got busy. How strange.
Yes, and from management's point of view, how fortunate for all of us. All right, so. As only we can put it.
Right. Wait, but you got to close the deal first.
Yes. Yeah. I'm making a lot of calls. Got a lot of calls. Okay. How about some results, dog?
What's that famous phrase? Exchange of paper.
Yeah. I mean, seeing like at some point, like there's a paper exchange happening. That's always a good one. Right? I'm big on the paper part where you really do feel at that point the deal's closed.
Cheddar is better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And when it comes to the Olympic ratings, let's face it. I mean, for the suit, the rides at Fantasyland are always open. So, but yes, baseball beat all of that with a 25.2 last night overnight rating. That's a big number. America was into it. Now, is it? Now, the Indians have a lot, you know, certainly some to do with it, but let's face it, the Cub factor is pretty big. And they win it. So?
That had to have been one of the shortest rain delays. I was thinking, boy, I wonder how long we're going to be locked into this. But 17 minutes, pretty impressed they were able to get the tarp on and off in that short a period of time. It was really coming down there for a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know. That was different. That was different. Today on the show, we'll have our high school announcers to preview the playoffs. We're also going to take a look at, well, we're going to have what, Donnie Collins on today? And also look at Iowa football with Scott Dochterman. Tomorrow, Jeff Byers will be on the show. talk about Penn State wrestling. And my brother returns, who currently is taking me to the woodshed on picks.
No, not just you.
Look, you are collateral damage. I mean, he okay.
I know blood's thicker than water here.
Okay, you know, I mean, all the grenades are being aimed at one person. By the way, it just so happens you're standing near me. let's be honest about it.
Location,
here, right?
location.
Okay. You know, Lisa Barrick is telling Drew, you know, in real estate, location means everything. Okay, so I'm over here like, okay, yeah, I'm beating you too, Sean. Yeah, right. Yeah, great. All right. You could win the whole thing, but if he beat me, he will have won. Well, right now he's winning. And the odd thing is, on the TV show, With Trey Bauer, with Jay, with Todd Sadowski, I'm winning. Like, I can't figure this out. Oh my goodness, can't figure it out. I do this show, boom. You know, I'm out there throwing darts. It's like, and I'm throwing darts into the wind, and it happens to be gale force. Some have circled back and hit me. So that's what we've got coming up on the show today and then tomorrow. So we'll have Donnie Collins today. We'll have Scott Docterman today. I want to get into something quickly here. We're not going to have a lot of open phone line time today, but the Big Ten, okay, it's going to be six games next year on Friday nights. Penn State will not play at home on Friday night. It doesn't mean they won't play on Friday night, but they will not play at home on Friday night. And Michigan's not going to play at all. They've already told the Big Ten that no. Ohio State says, no, not going to do it at home. But, you know, if the circumstances were right, maybe, and I think the circumstances would be, hey, we get a bye week before the Friday night game, maybe we would, you know, which I can understand. That kind of balances your schedule a little bit in terms of preparation. But, it's three non-conference games next season and three conference games. They'll be spread out over September and October on Friday night. They want to get into the Friday night mix. Okay. You're the fan. Now, Scott Docterman, by the way, is going to be on the show with us in the final half hour. He's one of the reporters that broke this story yesterday. So we're going to talk to him about that, then we'll talk about Iowa football as well. Again, I say this with all due respect, but this is the kind of package of games where I think you can expect some of the lower attendance programs. Maryland, Rutgers, Indiana, Purdue, Illinois, Minnesota, Northwestern. I mean, I think that base of seven schools, I think, would be involved in this. Now, the opening weekend, it's really only five, because the opening weekend, Labor Day, you have teams playing Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday. There's a couple of Sunday games. There's usually a Monday night game, too. So Labor Day weekend, it's all college football on opening weekend. So that would be one of the weekends, you know, right there where you'd have a Friday night game. Might have a couple Friday night games. Might have a Thursday night game. Then I think it would be five more after that, because that would be one of the non-cons right there. Then after that, it'd be five others. Now, you're busy working on Friday night with everything that you have to do with high school football. When you're done, do you get back and watch the late Friday night game?
Well, it takes me an hour to get home, so it would all depend on how big the matchup is, at least for me personally.
Okay. I do watch the Friday night game, whether I'm on the road or here at home. Now, what I deviate from is, like, for example, last week I watched the World Series, but there's a show on CBS I like, Blue Bloods, with Tom Selleck and others. I'll watch that at 10 o'clock, but I'll watch some of the Friday night game that's on. Especially if Pac-12 game, I'll watch. I usually have a few Pac-12 games on. But the question I have is, you know, would you watch this? Now, Penn State's doing it the right way. They're saying, look, Friday night is high school football night. And you know how strongly I feel about that, so I'm glad that they feel that way. Let's see. Let's bring in Dick. Hey, how are you doing today, Dick?
Hey, Mike, I have a question for you on this Friday night thing.
Sure.
Basically, obviously, they tell you what they're going to do next year. But thinking in the future, can they force teams to play a Friday night football game if they don't want to? Because I can see down the road where a lot of teams, if they lose revenue, are not going to want to play Friday night football. I don't care if it's Indiana, Purdue. These people that come to these games on Saturdays don't come from next door. A lot of them drive there to get there.
I think that's why. Right. That's a good point. Yeah. I think, can they force you to do it? I think what the response that you've seen from this is that you've seen the response from Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. But Scott Docterman, I was talking to him earlier today, Dick. He said the response from others like Indiana, Illinois, Purdue is different. They seem more willing to do it.
I can see. I mean, I can't. I personally have never been wild about having 8 nights a week of college football. Like they try to force down everybody's throat now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They want to go opposite everybody. I mean, you see games all the time. Really, didn't they have Sunday night? Maybe they still do. I don't pay much attention if they do. I guess they try to force all these games on people that. And I just can't understand why the Big Ten would say, okay, we'll do that too, and not even go and ask everybody before they did it. And maybe they did.
I think they have. That's why they already knew that Penn State would not host, Ohio State would not host, and Michigan won't do it, period.
I can't see Michigan State wanting to do it either.
Well, at the opening weekend, they will. Okay, the opening weekend is different. Michigan State has not played on a Saturday in the opening weekend in a few years now.
Okay.
They played on Friday night. They played on Thursday night. And opening weekend, look, most schools aren't in class then anyway, Labor Day weekend. So that's a little more flexible. Now, the other five, which would be two more non-conference and three conference games, I agree with you. I cannot see Michigan State saying yes to any of that.
Yeah, I guess the other side of that coin is, and you know, let's say that out of the numbers of schools, a bunch of them say they're not doing this, which means then the schools that agreed to do it have to be the ones that do it every year. Same schools.
Well, you know, they're also looking to get their name of the program out there in publicity, and it's interesting in the triangle of Purdue, Indiana, Illinois, from West Lafayette to Indianapolis to Bloomington to Danville, Illinois, into Champaign-Urbana, there is a lot of high school football played in there. And I thought Chris Ash's wife brought up a really interesting point. She said, what if they make Rutgers play Friday night? I now have to choose between going to support my husband or going to the high school game to see my son. And she also brought up the point about, what about recruits? They won't be able to go to Friday night games.
I mean, I just don't understand enough about what network's going to cover this, or is it on multiple networks?
It'll be on a combination of ESPN and Fox Sports 1. They would split it's six games total in September and October. It's three non-conference and three conference games. And really, it's two non-conference because the opening weekend, everybody's spread out. So that would be one of them. So it's Fox Sports 1. They'd probably have three, and ESPN probably have three.
I mean, if Penn State wanted to play the game after Thanksgiving, I mean, I could understand that. Like the old Pitt series was all those years, but I just can't see them wanting to hope that their fans drive up there for a Friday night football game. I just did that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. In fact, any game on Thanksgiving Friday, first of all, November is exempt from this. There will be no Friday night games in November. The only Friday game that they have scheduled in November is the Nebraska-Iowa game.
Yeah. But you know what it's like getting to something. It's like, for example, going to Bloomington, right. Indiana is not exactly the best trip in North America. I mean, it's just not.
You're telling me.
It's in Indiana, but it's not like going up to Notre Dame or something, you know, to me, right along. So to me, I just can't see a lot of their fans that would go to a football game on a Saturday wanting to leave work early to get there for a Friday night football game.
And not only that, it brings with it a lot of logistics on parking. For example, let's take the Indiana example. Say you pick Friday, September 21st, whatever, and you're going to play at Bloomington. Well, what do you do with all the parking on campus?
Yeah,
I mean, it's a work day. It's a work day. You have to certain things you have to do. Let's take Iowa for example. You know what's on the east side of the stadium, directly across the street? World Class Children's Hospital. What are you going to tell them to shut down?
Yeah, I was at Carver Hawkeye. We walked over to this football stadium, basically.
Yeah, and the hospital, Dick, when you walked down there,
yeah.
On the left, that's the hospital complex.
Yeah, I mean, I...
You're going to tell them to shut down, know, not just, park?
Just thinking about it, I can envision more schools. I just can't believe that many would want to agree to it if they had to do it every year. And I'll leave it go at this. But at Michigan, when we went out there, we parked on the golf course.
And Alistair McKenzie, who designed Augusta National...
Yeah.
Also designed that golf course you parked on. He rolled over in his grave, my man.
I was actually shocked when anybody said, "Oh yeah, go park on all those cars on the golf course." I mean, obviously they weren't playing golf that day either, but it just struck me as odd.
It's odd, and when you tell people it's the same guy that designed Augusta National, they just shake their heads.
I shook my head when we parked there, to be quite truthful. It just didn't make any sense to me, and I'm not really a golfer, but it just, that, I mean, I can't imagine, but stuff happens, I guess. Well, this will be interesting.
You get to park the car and then take one shot with your wedge and then go into the game.
Yeah. this isn't going to end this year, so I'm just anxious to see what happens down the road.
Right.
I didn't mean to belabor it, but I just think it's, to me,
you
it's
are
stupid.
Right.
I'm going to let it go at that.
You are right.
Friday Night Wrestling.
All right. That's right. It's not going to end this year. You're right. Okay, we'll take a break. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I guess the suit made a sale to save the station.
Ding, ding.
It turned out that mini suit was the one that bought it.
Or gave the suit the lead and he gets a 10% cut. Something like that.
Okay, so what order do we want to do this in?
Well, we got Greg Wetzel in the studio, and then we will get to the Braves Seals combo for Lazo and O'Brien. So,
all right. So we'll do this day in sports history first.
Yep,
as we always do.
Yep, and Greg standing by.
All right, and Greg, appreciate that. Providence became the first NFL team to host a night game in 1929 under floodlights. The game was against the Chicago Cardinals. Gordie Howe played in the first of his 21 All-Star Games, 1948. 1953, the Rules Committee of Organized Baseball restored the sacrifice fly. The rule had actually not been used since 1939 in scoring. Last night, you know, I've lamented at times that I don't feel, despite all the practice over and over and over again, that I don't feel some of the professional games are played as smart. Well, last night, this goes so far under the radar at the moment. But Amaro, when he came into pinch run, when Brian hit the ball to center field, he intelligently read Rajay Davis. No, as he looked back, he says, look, he says he's going back like he's going to catch the ball. And when he settled underneath it, he got himself back to first, tagged, and went to second Now, that's not a sacrifice fly. But what happened after that was that Cleveland then felt forced to walk Anthony Rizzo intentionally, which then brought Zobrist to the plate. That play that he made, the domino of it, was huge in the Cubs winning last night. An intelligent, savvy play. There are 11 people on the field. 11 people on the field in game 7, extra innings, and this guy was the coolest cat in the field. He knew exactly what to do. That will go under the radar because they'll talk about Zobrist. He got the big hit. That domino set up the whole inning. All right, that's a look at this day in sports history. All right, let's bring in Greg in studio. Greg, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Great to be here. How are you doing today?
Doing well. All right, Little Brown Jug game last week was like being in a playoff game. The fact that they had to go through the pressure of that, does that benefit Lewisburg this week, that they at least understand that part of it?
I think it's a great benefit to them. I think really the last 2 weeks, they've had to win the last 2 weeks against Bloomsburg and Mifflinburg to get into the playoffs, and they've performed well defensively both games. They shut Bloomsburg out last week. Mifflinburg scored in the last play of the game to make it 33-9, but they held, until that point, they had held Mifflinburg to the last series under 100 yards total offense for the night.
So now they've got Montoursville, the number one seed in the AAA semifinals. What makes the matchup? I mean, obviously we know the quarterback's really good. So is that the whole matchup there?
No. I think he's the biggest key in the game. Well, first time we played, that Lewisburg played Montoursville, he threw for 270 yards. It could have very easily been 400. He had about 6 or 7 drop balls that night.
Yeah.
And his wide receivers typically don't do that. He has some really good wide receivers in Tommy Shea and Riley Conboy. So I don't envision that happening again, but I think Lewisburg knows that. They have that film to go back and look at and see what they were doing defensively and possibly make some changes to their defense for the game on Friday night.
All right, do you play these guys, in your opinion, Greg, more? Look, I'll give you 5 or 6, 7 yards here, let them make the throw, and be patient until they get to the red zone? Or can you jump a route?
I think you can jump a route. I agree with the being patient, but they really run that 7 yard and out, 7 yard and out, 7 yard and out to death. Now they will go the up and go. You know, they'll do that out and go, and they did that against Lewisburg the last time. But I think they're more ready for it. Last time they tried to play and press man to man defense, and I don't think you'll see as much press man to man this week. I think you'll see more zone coverage for them.
All right, what can the Lewisburg offense do to, A, put up points, but also keep him on the sidelines?
Run the football. And they've been lucky to do that, fortunate to do that, I guess, the last 2 weeks. Aaron Veloz has come in and done a great job. He ran for 107 yards last week against Mifflinburg. He ran for 70 yards in the second half against Bloomsburg. The offensive line has seemed to take a liking to that run blocking. They're running more I formation in the backfield, so they're getting an extra blocker in there with the fullback. I think that, and they ran for 100 yards against Montoursville the first time they played them. Trey Delball was the tailback that night. He ran for over 100 yards. So they can run the ball against this team. They've proven they can do that. It's just now doing it on Friday night again.
How different, in your opinion, are the two teams now compared to when they played?
Lewisburg is a much more confident team than they were the first time they played, because of running the football. That has turned their whole offense around. They have really settled into a rhythm on offense now. They've gotten the tight end more involved in the short passing game. They still have their wide receivers. Last week they threw a bubble screen that went 70 yards for a touchdown. So they're much more comfortable in who they are right now. Coaches are too, because If you've watched Lewisburg the last 2-3 years, they were primarily a passing team, not a running team. Right now, they're primarily a running team, which sets up the pass.
Greg, appreciate it very much. Good luck with the broadcast tomorrow night.
Thank you very much.
All right, so that'll be in the one semifinal, Lewisburg against Montoursville. The other half of the bracket, by the way, is Danville against Loyal Sock in the Class AAA semifinals. Class Quad A semifinals. The number one seed, Jersey Shore, will take on Athens. Long trip from Greece, but really, I wish them the best. And Shikellamy will take on Selinsgrove. Grove. And the voice of Shikellamy football is Mike Ferlazzo. Actually, well, we're going to go to Pat O'Brien next. Okay. Pat, go ahead. Great to have you with us.
Actually, we do have Mike ready to go.
Oh, you have Mike ready to go?
Yep.
All right. So that thing that says green next with Pat doesn't work. Okay, I got it. Okay. Mike, great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. It's good to be with you. And big game once again, you know, the second rally in the valley with these two rivals, Shikellamy and Selinsgrove. And you could maybe call it the unofficial Heartland Athletic Conference Division I championship since they both shared the conference title.
Yeah, indeed. They played early in the season. So I'll start with you, Mike, what I asked Greg. In your opinion, how different are the two teams now compared to when they played the first time?
Well, the one thing about Selinsgrove, you know, Logan Libby was back, and he's going to be one of their all-time great quarterbacks, a 6'1", 196-pound junior. The first time out, I think, even though he was getting some confidence, certainly with some of his receivers, I think they've built a lot more chemistry since they played Shikellamy. You know, they had gone on a run there where they had won five in a row before losing last week at Southern Columbia, and Libby has really thrown the ball well throughout that. Now, he had a good game against Shikellamy in that earlier 21-14 Shikellamy victory on week four. He was 19 of 29 for, you know, 212 yards and a touchdown, but, you know, certainly didn't have a monster game. Shikellamy did a pretty good job defensively against him, and so that's, you know, one of the big keys. And, you know, for Shikellamy, they're really not that much different, other than they're probably more different than they were the last half of the season because they've gotten healthy all of a sudden. That they do have Joey Folk, their sophomore halfback, their second leading rusher. Maybe their big play threat out of the backfield coming back to this game. Pearson White, who had been nursing a hip pointer, was back and actually scored three touchdowns last week, two on defense. Could have had a fourth, too, because he had another one wiped off by a holding penalty on the offensive side. And maybe, just maybe, they're also going to get back Jake Stein, their left tackle. We'll have to see about that. He'll be a game-time decision, but he's their biggest offensive lineman at 6'7", 280, a senior. So, you know, they're getting healthy both physically and emotionally because, you know, Shikellamy was kind of a little down after, you know, losing badly to Loyal Sock the previous week. You know, Milton, a winless team, they won 59-12, so that got the confidence going once again. And I think the fact that, you know, Selinsgrove lost last week to Southern 52-35, you know, maybe that evens them up a little bit back as they come into this clash. It should be a great game again.
Yeah, it should be a terrific game. What do you see as some of the keys in this game?
Well, once again, for Shikellamy, I think it's going to be running the football and keeping Logan Libby off the field. You know, first half, he had some success, particularly early on. I mean, they marched it right down the field against Shikellamy to score a quick touchdown. But in the second half, the offensive line really started to assert itself for Shikellamy and really win that battle up front. Gabe Tilford got going. And by the way, Tilford now a 1,000-yard rusher, 1,003 yards with his 114-yard performance last week against Milton. So he's going to be a big key. If they can get that going, get that push, certainly get the halfbacks involved, both Pearson White, Lamir Mitchell, and Joey Folk, you know, they keep that explosive Selinsgrove offense off the field. And again, for Shikellamy, it's always a key for them to force turnovers. They forced four more and actually had two returns for touchdowns last week on the defensive side against Milton. So they've got 31 on the season, a plus 15 in turnover margin. And I think they're thinking they can probably force a few, maybe get a pick off of Libby. So that'll be a key for them. You know, for Selinsgrove, I really think they could be really balanced, and they have been. You know, Garrett Campbell really impressed us the first time out. And with him complimenting Libby, that just makes him much more effective. You know, and again, for Shikellamy, I think the defensive side, they just can't let these receivers get past them. They kept everything in front of them. Yes, they were able to drive the ball, but everything was short and underneath a lot of times that first time out. So I think that's going to be a big key once again.
What will be the value of ball control for Shikellamy, Mike?
Oh, I think they have to shorten this game, Steve, because I don't think there's any question. Selinsgrove's a bit more of an explosive offense, you know, with Libby and some of the weapons that he has, at least throwing the ball. You know, that's the problem with Shikellamy is Tate Krankowski really hasn't shown the ability to have that consistent success throwing the ball. So they really want to run it and shorten the game. And I got to tell you, Southern Columbia, now granted, that's an undefeated team, but they also run the wing T, and they had over 700 yards against Selinsgrove in that 52-35 win last week. you know, that'll be key because I'm sure Shikellamy has looked at that video and has seen all the plays that worked against Seelens Grove and certainly would like to do that same kind of a game plan against the Seals, you know, and really shorten the game and keep that explosive Seals offense off the field.
Mike, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Steve, always a pleasure.
All right, that'll be on News Radio 1070 WKOK and Eagle 107. It'll be the Seelens Grove broadcast with Pat O'Brien and Ryan Brandt. Pat, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. Great to be here once again. If we're talking, means Seelens Grove's moved into the playoffs, so it's always great to talk to you at this point.
No question about it. Let's get to the game with Southern Columbia. It's at the end. Does it have any deeper meaning other than what the final score was?
No, I don't think so. Last year was a very unique situation. They're both teams were undefeated, trying to finish the regular season undefeated, so that carried a lot more value. But in terms of where they were, well, let me take that back. The only other value it had, that if they could have beaten Southern, they would have been the number one seed throughout district playoffs, so that carried some value there. But when it all comes to, it's a great matchup for Seelens Grove. It's a great test, obviously. Southern's unbelievable. I think they do gain confidence, even though they lost by 17. But I think they gain a tremendous amount of confidence to be able to put 35 up on, you know, a Southern team. So, no, I don't think carries much meaning other than the final score. They'll take a lot of confidence into tomorrow night's game, though.
All right. What needs to change this time compared to when they played back in September?
I think and I think it has changed. I think the big thing is, and Mike talked about it too, I think it's a confidence level for Seelens Grove. I think they came out in Shikellamy to play them in week four. They had an easy win over Milton, lost to Montoursville, came back and beat Shamokin. But I think they were still just very unsure of themselves. They're a rather new team, led by their quarterback, who was a returning quarterback, but he had a lot of new receivers. And I think it was a confidence level. But, boy, I mean, they've changed that. And really, Logan Lively, we knew what we had coming in. But receiver-wise, I mean, Jared Inch has 50 catches, Ricky Cope 38, and even Ryan Booker with 21. So I go with Cody Showers with 19. So I think they're much more confident, and I think that's the big difference going into tomorrow night's game.
The running game part of it, they've been able to achieve some balance of late. Give me an idea between the offensive line and the backs, what they've been able to do to give them some balance and maybe make the passing game more dangerous.
Well, early on, I'd watch film and you see the comments of the coaches and stuff, and really what they wanted to do was see Garrett Campbell just take the opportunity that's there. And, I mean, you'd see on the film, and they would show this big hole and just tell him to take, you know, trust your eyes, use the hole, go through it, and get what you can out of it, instead of feeling like you need to cut it back and try to make big plays after big plays. And I think that him being a threat that way, plus they made changes. They moved Keith Reese from a tackle to a guard, so that really solidified things in the middle there on that offensive line, which is where they found a lot of success last week against Southern Columbia for Garrett Campbell when he went over 200 yards. It's between the tackles and using Keith Reese, Ryan Varner, Cross Cants up front. So that's really allowed them to develop a running game to support this unbelievably explosive passing game. And you know, it really leaves defense wondering, which one are they going to go to this week when you're able to do that with Campbell? And then, of course, Livey's able to do that, what he can do with 2,542 yards on the season. So what a balance it is, and it puts a lot of pressure on the defense.
And the pressure on the defense will be to stop that running game. Is that really the game within the game right there?
Yeah, and no doubt about it. I mean, when you look at the numbers for what Shikellamy's doing, running the ball, and when they can do it with three different guys, and Mike nailed it, that Southern was able to run all over this defense a week ago, and I think they're on a completely different level. But the fact is that Gabe Tilford, Joe Falk, and Lamere Mitchell can run the ball, and they showed it against Seelens Grove the first time out, and went on to win that one 21-14. So it's going to come down to that. You know, you got to be able to stack the line of scrimmage, force Kronkowski to try to toss it around a little bit, and stop that run and get the ball back to the offense as quickly as possible, this explosive Seelens Grove offense.
Eagle 107 with the call with Pat O'Brien and Ryan Brandt coming up tomorrow night. Pat, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. Have a great weekend.
You too. Okay. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. To have you with us on the show today. Next half hour, Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. Then Scott Docterman on Iowa. Tomorrow, Jeff Byers will join us to discuss Penn State wrestling. And my brother on the show looking to start his Sherman March to the Sea of November of picks. Look at the Civil War. You'll find out what that means.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. William Tecumseh Sherman. Penn State, Iowa, Saturday night, 7:30, 6 o'clock, the airtime for the Deeds and Watson tailgate show. Tonight, James Franklin, baseball coach Rob Cooper on at the beginning. And the suit made a sale. So it's big. In fact, I believe Jennifer Wakeman is leading the news with the suit made a sale. It's kind of reverberated through the building. Finally, one of the relatives came through. What?
It's only a matter of time.
I need this. Please. All right. The Cubs won. How about that? Last night, first time since 1908, first time in our lifetimes, the Cubs won.
Yeah, I think the burning question was, when was he going to get Lester in there, and how long was he going to leave Chapman in there after that?
Right, but I did say on the show yesterday that Lester would pitch.
You did.
And I said on the show yesterday that Chapman would pitch, and it would be multiple innings, and that who were the guys he trusted? He trusted Chapman, Montgomery, and Edwards, who are the three guys that pitched. And you realize for Mike Montgomery, okay, you know what last night was for him? His first career save.
No pressure. Just get the final out.
I mean, that was his first career save. It's a good pitcher. I got him from Seattle, and what some people felt was a throwaway deal.
For a little bit there, I thought Carl Edwards was really going to shut the door.
Yeah, until they got to they had to get the final out. And then all of a sudden, it's like, okay, we're not really, don't aim it. Okay. It's okay. Next half hour, Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune on Penn State football. Scott Docterman, Iowa, final half hour, where we'll also talk about one of the stories that Scott broke yesterday about the Big Ten Friday Night Football package of 2017.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.